You're listening to the weekly podcast with Pastor Steve McCoy from 360 Church in Sarasota, Florida. We hope this message inspires you to press beyond ordinary.
We have been in a conversation about change, and we've determined that it is one of the most difficult human achievements for us to experience. And we know that it takes time, and we know it takes different angles of change. So we're literally walking through all of these different stations. We've looked at it kind of like a subway trip or a train trip or a bus trip. And if we get off prematurely at any of these stations, then we really will miss our goal, which let me restate from Romans chapter 8, that our goal is to become conformed into the image of Jesus Christ. And that there's so many things that come underneath that umbrella: how we communicate with each other, how we react to each other, how we respond, our compassion. All of these things come underneath that umbrella of becoming more and more like Jesus. We are going to start today with an example from the secular world. In the Bible, sometimes we are challenged to look at the things that we see in the secular world, extract the principle, and apply these principles to the spiritual world. Jesus said he held up a shrewd business manager as an example and said, hey, I'm not asking you to be a shrewd business manager, but there's a principle that can be learned. The book of Proverbs says, consider the ant. Okay, God is not calling us to be ants, but the principle of the ant, the hardworking ant, never giving up, etc. Today, I want to begin with an example from our athletic world with a gal named Diana Nyad. Who's heard of Diana Nyad? Just a handful of you. Okay. Diana Nyad is a long-distance swimmer, and she has had an incredible feats. And she has swum, I think she swam around Manhattan Island like 7 times or something crazy like that. But one of her dreams was to swim from Cuba to the United States. That is a swim of 110 miles, roughly, give or take a few miles, depending on if you got off course. She began by swimming in a shark cage because those waters are shark infested. But the first try, because of the 8-foot waves, kept clobbering her with the cage. And so after many, many hours of trying, they gave up. And it was super deflating for her. She tried a second time. She tried a third time. She tried a fourth time. And each of those times, if you read these stories, swimming from Cuba to the United States is the equivalent of swimming the English Channel 5 times. Think about that. When you're in the salt water that long, it does has an incredible impact negatively on your body. Your lips swell, your breathing begins to stop. Others have tried it and have died. There have been those who they had to rescue out of the water and they didn't make it. So this was a feat of really that no one had done. There were times when jellyfish, one of the most dangerous kind of jellyfish, I think it's called a box jellyfish, adhered to her back. There were times where it was taking her off course. There were times where they couldn't put a light in the water because the swim was 53 hours. That means, think about it, that is 2 full days, 48 hours, plus another 5 hours, over 2 days of solid swimming. I can almost make it to the end of my pool that's in my little community house. I don't have one in my house, but we have a queue. And if you shove off long enough, you can almost get to the other side. That's, again, that tell you something. They couldn't put a light into the water because it would attract sharks and other, you know, undersea creatures. And so they had to have just a little blinking light that she followed. Finally, on the 5th try, at 64 years old, that's 1 year older than me. I'm not seeing that in my near future. She made it. She made it. Here's what she said when she finished. She said, in that time, and she at times hallucinated, She literally saw the Taj Mahal and thought that she had gotten so far off course she was at the coast of India. I've done that on the way to work at times. I'm like, hey, where am I? She said, during that swim, I got three messages. One is that we should never, ever give up. Two is that you're never too old to chase your dreams. Three is it looks like a solitary sport, but it's a team. She had to raise $500,000 because she had to have a doctor, she had to have a navigator, she had to have a whole crew around her to help her make this trip. It was a team sport. We could stop right there and just say, wow, what we could learn in the spiritual world is resilience, to push through, to dream big, to allow God. We could extract a lot of things from this secular example. But she wrote a book, and the book was called Find a Way. And she said it's all about motivation. She was a highly motivated person. And the thing that she said in this book really caught my attention of our conversation today, the focus of our conversation today. You see, in the 60s, as you might remember, if you're old enough or if you've read in the history books, I grew up in the 60s, and the relationship between Cuba and U.S. was red hot in the negative. And we had the Cuba Missile Crisis. The Cold War was flaring. And so the relationship just over 100 miles away from us, it was a critical relationship to have. And she had a passion that was bigger than swimming, bigger than resilience, bigger than motivation. And she was trying to play a part, as sometimes musicians do or athletes do, to play a part in trying to have some kind of measure of goodwill. And she said this in her book called Find a Way. She said, more than the athletic feat, she said, I wanted to send a message of peace and love and friendship and happiness between the people of the United States and Cuba. This wasn't about our differences of government. This wasn't about unfair. She was speaking about the hearts of the people. I've been to Cuba 3 times. The people are beautiful. And so often, as many peoples around the world, we get caught under the umbrella of unfair governments. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about this morning is to have not only motivation, but how are we motivated and changed to see beyond what we see? I'm going to extract what Diana Nyad did and say there is motivation and there is eternal motivation. You see, eternal motivation causes us and requires of us to look beyond what we can see. So if you thought change was difficult, eternal change is even more difficult. It's almost as if we're seeing through two sets of lenses. I have worn these little bad boys since I was 9 years old. And you see Mary, Ernie. It's gotten worse over the years. These are little glasses that I look through every day of my life. Even when I get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. If I don't have these things on, it doesn't go well. And it's like at times we're looking through lenses that are right in our face, but God calls us, if we're truly going to change, to look through a windshield. And too often we have this challenge. In Mark chapter 14, verse 38, Jesus said this, our spirit is willing. There's something in us like, yeah, I mean, we're connecting right now, right? Oh, windshield, whoa, got that. But the flesh is gravitational. The flesh is weak. The flesh has this magnet of sorts that keeps reducing the eternal windshield to a set of small glasses. And that's a challenge for us. Every day, there's an undertow. Every day, it seems like there are jellyfish. Every day, there's a shark or a shark cage. Every day, there's the weather, the wind, the salt water that keeps telling us, give up. Give up. Make it small. Reduce the dream of God in your life and make it small. When she was swimming, she said, I had to disregard, are you ready? The monkey chatter. I love that phrase. the monkey chatter. I don't know if you've ever been in another country, I've been in countries where it is difficult to get to sleep at night. We were been in Belize a number of times, and it's difficult to get to sleep at night because of the monkey chatter. I mean, they're just going crazy, and it's almost like they're trying to keep you awake. The monkey chatter is that noise that causes us, this is a key, not to be to live a sinful life, but to live a human life without eternity in mind. That's a big difference. Because many of us as Christ followers are doing what we did today. We're surrendering our lives and saying, hey, God, I'm broken. I'm not perfect. And I want to live a life for you, and I want to become more and more like Jesus. But the unfairness of the world, the noise of media, the things that our own flesh, which is weak, is constantly pulling us down to live just a normal human life. And God said, oh, no, I want you to change at a higher level. Today, we look at the story of Ruth. It's a beautiful, enchanting story. But there are some things I believe that are so embedded and baked into this story that we can extract something very, very important for us today. I was just thinking about this yesterday. I don't know why, but I was thinking, if someone were to ask me, hey, what's your favorite verse in the Bible? I'm not sure I have a favorite, like this is the one, you know, because it changes. People ask me about, you know, classical music, because that's my background. What's your favorite composer? I'm like, depends on what day it is. You know, some days I feel like Rachmaninoff, and sometimes I feel like Mozart. And so it depends. But yesterday I was thinking, one of my favorite verses is Jesus wept. And I know that sounds simplistic, but the reason I like that is that Jesus got us in that moment. You know, when he was weeping, he was at a funeral setting. Lazarus had died, been in the tomb for days, and he was getting ready to bring him back to life. So he wasn't weeping because of the loss of that, of Lazarus, because he can bring him back to life. He was really hit by our human condition and the challenges that we go through. And he saw people weeping and how hard it was for them. And man, he was living in the midst of it. Listen, Jesus was tempted in every way, and he understands us. He gets us. He walked in our skin. So today, before we jump into the book of Ruth, I'm off notes now. Sometimes God just leads you to say something, because I really believe that there are people sitting here, or maybe you're sitting at home, or maybe you're sitting in your car somewhere listening to this podcast, but someone needs to hear that God gets you and understands you, and that you're trying to, this may be inspirational for you, but God is trying to say, let's get beyond inspirational. We didn't come here just to be inspired today. We came here today to become more and more like Jesus. And whatever noise is causing you right now to miniaturize God, he's bigger than that. He's bigger than that. We begin in the story of Ruth. Let me just set it up for just a few minutes here. The story starts with tragedy. The book of Ruth starts with tragedy. And it begins with a family. The wife's name is Naomi. There's a lot of names here, so I'm going to try to minimize the number of names. So Naomi has a husband, and she has two sons, okay? I'm going to kind of walk around. We're going to call this Bethlehem today, okay? Lives in Bethlehem. There was a famine in the land. And so she looked at her husband. Her husband looked at her and said, hey, we're going to move, and we're going to chase the food. It didn't seem like there was a God motivation here. I wasn't moving from here to there, but we're hungry and we've got to do something. And I'm going to propose to you that this move sometimes represents a miniaturized move in our lives. It wasn't sinful. It wasn't anything wrong with it, but it wasn't the move that God would have intended. I'll show you why I think that's a possibility. All right. So they move. They all moved to this place called Moab. If you know anything about the Bible, Moabs were not favorites. in the Bible. They were enemies of God. Their beginnings were sketchy at most. It came from Lot and his two daughters. His two daughters had physical relationship with their father, and yada, yada, yada. So, the Moabites were at odds with the Israelites in many different intersections. So, but they went into there where they became foreigners. The husband dies. The son dies. Son number one dies. And son number two dies. Before the sons died, they marry a Moabite. Now, if you know anything about the intention of God, this was not the intention of God, because he was concerned that when people married across culture, that they would be drawn away like Solomon to other gods. And certainly the Moabites did not worship the true God. But they married these boys married to, each of them married a Moabite girl, and then they died. So here's Naomi with two daughter-in-laws in the location of Moab. All right, we're all tracking. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 6, when Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food, Naomi and her daughter-in-laws prepared to return home from there. Okay, this is where the visual is going to help. They all started in Bethlehem. They moved over here where there was a famine. And then what happens? She's now devastated. And she has two Moabitess daughters, right? So now they're in a foreign land where God is not being worshipped. And she hears what we're reading here is that God had come to the aid of his people. Where? Back in Bethlehem. My proposal is, what if she had not moved? And had she not moved, and because here, what happens is that when we miniaturize life and we allow the noise of life to freak us out, then we say, oh, then I've got to make this miniaturized move, and we missed the windshield move of God. Had she stayed in Bethlehem, she would have seen the miracle how God came to the aid of her people. Does that make sense? Because she was like, uh-oh, Frank! Son's married somebody outside the culture, outside of their faith, and like, man, everything, the bottom dropped out. Missed the miracle. Let's just move back to the miracle. Jesus said it this way in John chapter 6 when he said, I'm the bread of life. And he just had the miracle of feeding the thousands. And he turned around to the people in a very real and authentic moment and said, hey, dude, you guys are just chasing the food, right? Are you really coming after me, or did you just go to Moab and chase the food, right? What can happen in our lives is that we can substitute the lower life, earth, for the higher life. Watch this. When they came back, Naomi became bitter. In verse 20 of Ruth chapter 1, don't call me Naomi, which had a beautiful meaning, but call me Mara, which meant bitter, because the Almighty has made my life bitter. Oh, it's his fault now. I wish that I could stand before you in all honesty and say, I've never been here, but I have. I'm too afraid of God to lie in front of you. That miniaturization sometimes causes us the oh no factor, like, God, where are you? This is your fault. Thanks a lot for putting me in Moab. Thanks a lot for that. And all of a sudden she becomes bitter. And watch this. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. All right. So when she went away, the way she's defining full is that she had all of her earthly ducks in a row. That means my husband was alive. I'm going to a place where they don't worship God. Obviously, it wasn't a priority. But my earthly life has made me full. And when earthly life makes us full, then we don't open our mind and our eyes to eternal motivation to change. Does that make sense? I believe that there in this country, I believe that in this country, living in America, which we love, we are faced with sometimes a greater challenge to grow into the image of Christ. As you know, on any given week, including this past week, I am on a Zoom call to at least 10 countries. Most of these places are impoverished financially. Most of these places don't know where their next month's rent or food is going to come from. Some of these countries, like this past week, are in war, like in Ukraine, Nigeria. They're on the brink. Some countries are on the brink of absolute chaos. Why is it that they are eternally full? Why is it that they have more joy, more faith, more leaning into? So instead of criticizing you as Americans and me, I have more compassion. In other words, I'm speaking to you, not most of us who are financially on the brink, but because of our comfort in this country, we of all people on earth must be on guard of feeling full, but being spiritually empty. And I love you. Me too. Come on. Me too. Because we're bobbing up and down in the deep end of flesh-filling culture. Oh, I'm full. Man, when we left, I'm full. Didn't have God. Didn't have any God message to go to Moab. Didn't have any connection that we read about in the beginning of the story. Nothing to do with God, but I was full. Really? And I missed the miracle of God. Oh, man. Her daughter-in-laws had every right to go back to Moab. So Naomi, who was in this bitter mode, said, hey, go back. Just go back. My life is wrecked. Don't hang around me. Go back. You know, sometimes when you're in that mode, you think, hey, I'm the last person you want to be hanging around. I don't know if you heard about the man who, he was in his older years, he took his wife's hand and said, hey, you remember when we went through bankruptcy and hey, I work alone. No, I'm just going to talk to you. I love you. I'm just playing. I love that voice. I love that sound, by the way. Yeah, he took her hand and said, he remember went through bankruptcy. And she goes, oh, yeah. He says, you were right there with me. And man, you remember that time where I lost my job? And she goes, yeah, you were right there with me, honey. Yeah. And you remember the time where, you know, I had that car accident and, man, broke my arm. Yeah, you were sitting right there beside me. He goes, you know what? I've really figured out. And she said, no, what? He said, I think you're bad luck. This is how Naomi was feeling. She said, no, go. So the girls were like, hey, we're going to go with you back to Bethlehem. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. She took her up on the offer. She's going to go back to Moab. But Ruth clung to her. Naomi said to her, look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people, watch, and to her gods. Why don't you go back with her? See, I believe that the noise, the monkey chatter, is constantly calling us back to a place that's, hey, it's without God. There was not anything from a Bible point of view that was sinful for Orpah to go back. But she was going to miss the movement of God. But Ruth clung to her. And Ruth replied in verse 16, don't urge me to leave you or turn back from you. Because where you go, I will go. These now famous words, and where you stay and I will stay. Where your people will be, my people will be, and your God, who is doing miracles, will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. This is a woman who is looking through a windshield, not just small glasses. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging here. Here's the question. Do the people around you see your commitment, your change, your eternal windshield in your life so strongly that they don't even consider urging you to walk away from God? Man, forget this guy. I'm going to go to somebody else. This gal's windshield is so strong. Her commitment is strong. Not death is going to separate me. The world behind me, the cross before me, I have decided to follow Jesus. And the world stops urging. I'm reminded this morning that we're willing to do things that are uncomfortable when we look through eternal windshields. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8 tells us, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place that he would later receive as his inheritance, he obeyed God. And even though through his small lenses he did not know where he was going, by faith he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign land. He lived in tents. Verse 10, he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. You know what I notice sometimes? In an organization, in a home, in a family, in an individual. Happens in the church. I believe that we have to look bigger at what God is doing. Let me be really specific to what I see happening in this church. I'm entering my 41st year of ministry. That's not my first rodeo. Throughout the years, we have tried to do different things in different churches, have better choirs, have better street signs, have better bulletins to pass out, to have better donuts, to have better English muffins, to have better bagels, to have multiple cream cheese because Mrs. Smith didn't like the cream cheese that we offered, to have bigger this and bigger that. I have served in the church for a dozen years of 5,000 members, and we had 4 baseball fields and gymnasiums and everything else. And there are different pure motives that we have to do all these things. But in Bethlehem, God was doing something different. Listen carefully. God moves when there is a church that looks through windshields and not glasses. What do I mean by that? I believe that God is growing our church, which He is. Not because of the preaching, not because... Oh, maybe so. No, totally good. Not because of the preaching, not because of the music, not because of the kids' program. Because this is a church that says, let's live through a windshield. Let's look through a windshield. So many of you are not even connected to all the places that we are in the world. But I often think this, probably almost every day, from the chair that God sits in, He sees warfare, He sees poverty, He sees sin at the highest level, He sees compassion. He sees every single country, every single city, every single town, including Sarasota, every single person. And when we are concerned about our neighbors, about our neighborhoods, about Vietnam and China and India and Ukraine, we are aligning with who God is. God cares about people. And in our Christian culture, we can often think, oh no, are we going to have the budget to do this? Are we going to have the space to do this? And we just need to back off, be obedient to God, make disciples who make disciples, be burdened by those who don't know Christ yet, and align ourselves with the Word of God, open ourselves to the Spirit of God, and allow God to do a miracle in Bethlehem. We can't lose sight of that. Should we have coffee? Yeah, we should have coffee. Should we have a place to gather? Yeah, we need a place to gather. We have to do all that stuff. But listen, that is not the centerpiece. So when things begin to cave in on you, keep looking at the windshield. When things are not going perfect in your family, your home, your neighborhood, your work, keep looking through the windshield. At my age and at my position as a lead pastor, I often say, keep looking through the windshield. Trust God. Don't miniaturize. Don't allow monkey chatter to miniaturize your view. Now watch this. When we live that kind of life, other people hear about it. Watch this. So let me give you a little bit of the story in case you don't know it. So Ruth is now living as a widow. If you look in impoverished countries, often sometimes the people that are begging are widows. They don't have Social Security in many countries. So now they've put themselves in a position with Naomi is a widow and Ruth is a widow. The Old Testament allowed for those who were impoverished to go into the fields after they had been harvested and pick up what was left. In fact, they said, they said to the farmers, hey, don't go back and just clean it clean as a whistle. If something falls, if a piece of corn falls, leave it there. And so it was kind of a system where it took care of the poor in the land. Ruth, out of humility, said, I'm going to go out to the fields because we're starving. And so she went to this landowner's place. His name was Boaz. Okay. Trying to simplify the story. Ruth said in Ruth chapter 2, verse 11, Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I would find favor. And she found favor in the eyes of a man named Boaz. So later in Ruth chapter 2, verse 11, I just read from verse 2, Boaz told Ruth, I've been told about all that you've done. When you allow God to move and allow God to change you and create a windshield, other people hear about it. If you make Christ the center of your business, people hear about it. If you make Christ the center of your family, people hear about it. And so he said, I've been told all you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband and how you left your father and your mother. See, all these things kind of get this white. It was tough for Ruth to leave. She still had a mom and dad. It was tough for her to leave. I've heard about how you left your mom and your dad and your homeland and everything you knew and the way of culture and all those things and your false gods. And you came to live with a people that you never known before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you richly be rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Hey, I want to be that kind of church. I want to be that kind of Christ follower. Where God, what do you want to take today? I just read this past week. It was from Africa. And this lady said, I was asked, what do you gain in prayer? And she said, oh, it's not what I gain in prayer. It's what I lose in prayer. I lose my selfishness. I lose my ambition. And in this conversation, I lose the smallness of my lenses. We end the story in a marvelous way, and some of you may know this story. At the end of the story, Ruth is now married Boaz. From a human point of view, it looks like, aw, that's a beautiful story God's put in the Bible. Here's a lady that did a hard thing, and she met a guy that was willing to take her in. And then they got married and they lived happily ever after. And I think that is such a beautiful story. It is a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story through smaller lenses. But when you look through the windshield at the end of the book of Ruth, you think, oh, that's what God was doing. Watch this. Ruth had a baby with Boaz, and the women living there said, in the last chapter of Ruth, Naomi has a son. She's got a new boy. And they named him Obed, who was the dad of Jesse, and he was the grandfather of King David. A Moabite. A Moabite. See, if I were writing the Bible, I would have put like a wowza right there. Wowza, period. Turn the page, next book. You know, sometimes when we read the Bible, we look at certain parts of the Bible like, okay, I'm just going to skip that. For example, like here's an image. This is how the New Testament begins. This is the book of Matthew, a record of the genealogy. Ooh, this should be exciting, of Jesus Christ. The son of David, the son of Abraham. Now, and then there's a bunch of names. So Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of this. If you have a King James version, he beget this one, he beget this one, beget, and we're going to beget, and turn the page, right? But nestled in these, every word of the scripture is there for a reason. Nestled in this is amazing. So when you look at those first words and you come on down, you see there's Ruth. But it's more than that. Each gospel writer had an angle. And that angle was sending a message. The book of Matthew was more of a Jewish angle. And what happened before, so God placed, do I think that the placement of the books of the Bible, do I think the placement are what God intended? Let me answer that with a question. Do you think God created the eyelashes of a mosquito? The answer is yes. If he did that, then yes, I do believe that God has everything in order in his word as he intended, okay? As we begin this, if we can go back to that slide, as we begin this book, the New Testament, Matthew is being used of God to say the past is important. So he begins the book by saying from Abraham through David. This is a book of the history of Israel and how Jesus Christ is embedded in the story because God was in the story. Because it's a Jewish book, you have to wonder, as Matthew was penning this, when it came to Moabite Ruth, he must have said, God, do you really want me to write that in the Jewish genealogy that there was a Moabite? And God would say, you bet your bottom dollar, because I'm painting to the world that it's a windshield God and not a little lens God. See? That God, whatever we're doing right now, has a bigger view that we can have. We're just swimming through the monkey chatter from Cuba to the U.S., but we're trying to do this bigger thing of helping people come together. You may just be starting a conversation with your neighbor, but God has something bigger. You may say, I'm a Christian and I have a business, or I work at Walmart, but God sees that as a mission field of people who desperately need the grace of God in their lives. See how God sees? We close with this story. And some of you have heard it, but boy, I could hear it every day. In the 1600s, there was a great fire in London, and the whole place was almost leveled. A beautiful cathedral was obviously part of that. And they hired this architect, this well-known architect. His name was Christopher Wren, to rebuild and be overseeing this whole project of this beautiful cathedral. Once they got the blueprints and did all that they needed to do, Christopher Wren walked onto the job site. He saw three bricklayers. One was crouched down, one was half standing, and one was standing tall. And he went to the one crouched down and said, hey, what are you doing? He said, I'm laying bricks because my family needs the money. The one half standing, he said, "Hey, what are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm in charge of this section. This is my wall. I'm building a wall." And to the one that was standing up that seemed to have a lot more energy than the other ones, he goes, "What are you doing?" He says, "I am building a cathedral for the Almighty." They all three were laying bricks, but one of them had a bigger view. Let me pray with you. Father, thank you today for expanding our vision. There's so much monkey chatter, God. And the salt water and the jellyfish and the sharks and the cage for the shark and the lights and the coldness of the water and the news and the heartaches at times and the disappointments that we have with people and our expectations and our unmet expectations, our fears, our concerns, our worry, our anxiety, our illnesses, our sickness, our finances. God, they all cause our flesh to become weak and reduce the windshield to a lens. I'm thankful today that Jesus wept. Thank you, God, that you walked in our skin. Thank you that we're told that you were tempted in every way. Orpah was probably a good person, didn't do anything wrong. Led a life, probably the rest of her life, like a normal life. But the miracle was in Bethlehem. Father, I pray for us humans, with our limited vision, our limited view, to raise our sight line today, to broaden our lenses, and to live our lives thinking that our job is not just our job, our body is not just our body, our finances are not just our finances. It's all bigger than that. And when we look in the biggest windshield, we see a God who saw the world and set aside every single thing to come for us and to rescue us. What a windshield. Thank you for coming, Jesus, as we've celebrated today in the Lord's Supper. We close this time by shifting our heart, our focus toward those who, like us, at one time, are perhaps currently in that place in their life of trying to figure this whole thing out. And like us, try to get our act together so that we could win your favor. Try to become more religious. Try to start coming to a church. Try to start doing something on a human level because we didn't know the windshield view yet. And then we discover it. We discover a lens that is larger than we can ever wrap our heads around. That God, in all his love and compassion, you came for us and did what we could not do. That you rescued us from ourselves. You rescued us from sin by putting yourself on a cross and mysteriously and miraculously substituting yourself as the penalty instead of us. We deserved the penalty of our sin, God, but your grace said otherwise. I wonder who is here in this room today. Who is sitting at home, sitting in your car, sitting in your apartment, sitting in at work right now. And God is moving in a way that you are finding very difficult to explain. Let me say to you, don't resist that movement of God. It is supernatural. You will not understand it through your natural logic. It is supernatural. God is drawing you to himself. Jesus said, "All you who are weary, who are burdened down, heavy laden," he said, "come to me." and I will give you rest. I will give you life. I will give you peace, and I will forgive all your sin. Listen, is God resonating in your heart right now? I'm not asking you to get your act together. I'm asking you to turn your life 180 degrees and come running to God right in this moment, in your heart, in the chamber of your private self, in your heart, your soul, come to Him and say, God, I am here and I want you. Is that your prayer? You make it simple. You make it yours. You make it raw. God, I'm here. I don't want to trust in anything else. I don't want to trust in religion or trying to be good enough. I'm trusting in Christ. Would that be your prayer? I come to Jesus right now, and I 100%, not 99, 100% put my faith, my trust, my dependence onto Him, into Him. By faith, I receive Christ in my life. Is that your prayer? Father, I'm a sinner. I'm broken. I'm imperfect. Would you be that honest with God? He already knows. I'm a sinner. I'm broken. And I'm asking for the entire forgiveness, past, present, and future of my sin. Would that be your prayer? Oh God, I want to be your child. Is that your prayer? I want to be in relationship with you. So right now, God, I exchange my old life for your new one. Come inside me and ignite new life. God, would that be your prayer? Oh, great God, we thank you for being close enough to hear us, the heartbeat, the whispers, the cries of our heart. We praise you in Jesus' name.
Thank you for joining us, and special thanks for those of you who give generously to make this ministry possible. If you enjoyed the podcast, you can also subscribe or share it with your friends. For more information about 360 Church, visit us at the360church.com.